Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this session, last of today, before we have a big feast and a delightful evening. So we've got a lot still ahead of us, but in my unbiased opinion, since I'm moderating and speaking, I think there's some great talks. And you'll find out as we go along. We'll proceed as 20 minutes with 5 minutes of Q&A and then a 5 minute transition in between. I'll try and keep to the 2 o'clock today somewhat. So our first presentation, I just met Oscar Gonzalez and newly minted PhD about 5 years ago now, and in a teaching position and doing some interesting research. We had a good time talking last night. Oscar is going to talk to us about, were parasites mutualistic at the beginning? Oscar?
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming. Then, this is what it is about. We have, I think, a struggle with this quite difficult question, aren't we? Why does God allow disease and suffering? And last year, when I went to the Creation Museum in Kentucky to just visit, because I'm curious, I just stumbled with this sign that it seems to answer that question about disease. Before Adam sin, there was no disease, because in Revelations 21:4 it says, "There shall be no more pain." The promise of a future time similar to Eden. And after Adam sin, what happened? Well, disease entered the creation after Adam's sin. Then what it causes? Genetic mistakes, mutations, excessive cell reproduction rates, cancer, and taking more than giving, parasitism. Well, what is the common logic here? God created everything good. Disease and suffering were the product of the fall. Parasites cause disease and suffering. Then, parasites were not harmful at the beginning. Well, it is possible that this hypothesis could be tested, because it is staged like a scientific hypothesis. And if this guy pretend that this is real science, we can test that. So that sign caused me the leverage to do this little research on parasites at the beginning. Parasites give us some theological challenges. Also, if you have read a little bit of Parasites, maybe you're familiar with this book. If not, I will deeply really recommend it. Carl Zimmer is a popularizer of science, and this is one of the books that really captivated me. And in the first pages of the book, he made a quite interesting theological discourse. It's a bit long, but I think it's worth it to read. I just put some of the main ideas here. But this paragraph says like this. The mysterious nature of parasites created a strange, disturbing catechism of its own. Why did God create parasites? To keep us from being too proud, by reminding us that we were merely dust. How did parasites get into us? They must have been put there by God, since there was no apparent way for them to get in by themselves. Perhaps they were passed down through generations within our bodies to the bodies of our children. Did that mean that Adam, who was created in purest innocence, came into being already loaded with parasites? Maybe the parasites were created inside him after his fall. But wouldn't this be a second creation, an 8-day added to that first week, and on the following Monday, God created parasites. Well, then maybe Adam was created with parasites after all. But in Eden, parasites were his helpmates. They ate the food he couldn't fully digest and licked his wounds clean from within. But why should Adam, created not only with innocence but in perfection, need any help at all? And that's his conclusion. Here the Catechism seemed to have finally fallen apart. Well, and this is not just him. The most popular naturalist for biologists, and I think for everybody, are Darwin and David Attenborough. And they also made some reflections on parasites. In one of his letters, addressed to, I think, Asa Gray, when he was trying to convince him that he should keep his faith in God, this is what he responded. With respect to the theological view of the question, I cannot see evidence of the sign and beneficence. I cannot persuade myself that a beneficent and omnipotent God will have designedly created the Ichneumonai for feeding on caterpillars. Well, what he was talking about these parasitoid wasps that stings a caterpillar, paralyzes it, lays eggs inside the caterpillar's eggs, the developing larva, feed the caterpillar alive, and then burst it. I think that was the inspiration of the alien movie. That was quite creepy, isn't it? Well, and what about David Attenborough? This is what he responded in an interview. When creationists talk about God, they always instance hummingbirds, sunflowers, orchids, beautiful things. But I tend to think instead of a parasitic worm that is pouring through the eye of a boy who lives in the bank of a river of West Africa. And I ask them, are you telling me that God created this worm just for the purpose of living inside the eyeball of an innocent child? And that's his conclusion. That doesn't seem to me to coincide with a God who's full of mercy. Well, let's explore parasite along creation and see if really all parasites are evil and cause so much damage. It seems to happen like this. Let's start with viruses. Viruses are obligated parasites. There's no way that a virus can function without getting inside a cell. They are not even alive. They function there. And we know that some of them kill and still kill millions of people. Influenza and the HIV is represented there. Well, but now we know a little bit more about viruses. We know that viruses maybe were influential in the origin of life. And also, we know that not all viruses are bad. Some of the viruses that we have with us destroy harmful bacteria. And some viruses destroy cancer cells. They are known as the oncolytic viruses. Unicellular organisms, that are the bacteria and protists. Well, both of them cause very bad diseases. Tuberculosis, cholera, malaria are maybe, as a whole, diseases that have killed and make sick most of the people all over the world. This is another bacteria that maybe we have it. And if you like cats, you definitely have it. It's Toxoplasma. But now, we know a little bit more. That most bacteria in our body is good to us. The microbiome, that is getting more popular, no? And we didn't know that before. And this paper, this screenshot that I am showing here for this paper, it was published just 3 days ago. And it's really interesting. These guys who did this research, they test for the presence of this parasite, Toxoplasma, in different sort of people, and they found out a quite interesting correlation. The people that are willing to take risks, to invest in business, they have a significant amount of Toxoplasma. Well, what does Toxoplasma cause? Toxoplasma is a parasite that the main host are the cats. When Toxoplasma gets on mice, the mice lose the natural fear, and they even approach the cat. What happened with the mice? Well, it's killed, and the parasite moved from the mice to the cat. So this specific parasite maybe is making you a good entrepreneur. Maybe it should be tested. Something else. Fungi. Fungi cause also several diseases, no? Talus foot is one very common. Histoplasmosis, that is quite creepy. For biologists who we have worked in exploring caves, well, that could be deadly. And also they can release deadly toxins. We can get contaminated or even poisoned, killed by them. And not just to people. They kill several plants and crops, like this poor orange that is spoiled. However, what is the function of fungi? Is just that? No. Fungi are key for any terrestrial ecosystem. They recycle living matter and they help to form the soil. They have this alliance with plants, the mycorrhiza, and that makes the plant to grow. They are very important. About plants, can plants be parasites? Oh yes. One of the quite common plants that are parasites and are popular are mistletoes, that they are spread all over the world. Some of them are quite pretty. And when you go and see them and want to look where is the root is not in the soil, the root is inside a tree or another plant. So they parasitize on plants. And one of the common views in tropical areas is the strangler fig. You see something like a lot of vines that are surrounding the tree. And what's that? It is that a seed fell down, not through the soil, but to the top of the tree, and the plant started to grow from the top to the bottom, and then it started to develop secondary branches and stems, start to surround the tree, and start to press the host tree until it kills the tree. So it's a lot like a predator. Bad plants? No. They are keystone species. Mistletoes are very important, and also the figs in general. They provide fruits and they provide nectar to a lot of vertebrates and even insects. They are very important there. And animals? Well, there's a lot of animals, but I am going to focus on some parasites that attacked birds. Birds are my specialty. I am an avian ecologist. And there, while I was doing research on parasites, I found out some things that I didn't know. And it's quite interesting to know now. We like flamencos, don't we? Flamencos are quite cool. They're quite nice. And why flamingos have this wonderful color because they eat parasitized shrimp. Shrimp that is between all the inside the mud that the flamingos filter. They have some specific molecule that makes them more red, and that is because there is a trematode that make it visible to the flamingos, so they can feed on that and they capture that color. And sometimes we go, like we like birds, like to go to a wetland, and we see maybe a lot of birds that feed on fish. So why is that? Maybe because the fish are with a parasite that made the fish to be hyperactive. They move a lot and they tend to go to the top of the surface of the water, so the birds can feed on that. These parasites are helping to manage the ecosystem. We didn't know about that. What about parasites in humans? They are not bad all the time. Marlene Suk is another person that have written a book that I recommend, Riddle with Life. I'm quoting that from this book. We should view parasites as companions that helped our body to evolve. One example is the resistance to malaria. Malaria is killing a lot of people, but there are some specific group of people that are resistant to malaria, the ones that have the sickle cell disease. That is a specific adaptation that have evolved as a product for the resistance to malaria. And now we know about parasite worms. They test our immune system, and removing them may cause allergies and Crohn's disease. Well, is there any proof that parasites came from mutualists? Here I put two examples of something that we have been taught as the perfect mutualism. A hummingbird, a flower, an osprey, and the back of an antelope. Hey, is this hummingbird pollinating the flower? No, it's not. It is putting the beak not in the mouth of the corolla, it's in the base. He's robbing the flower. He's cheating. He's not pollinating. He's using a hole, or maybe making a hole, to extract the nectar without pollinating. The oxpecker is removing the scab, the ticks. No. It is making a wound and drinking the blood. So sometimes it is not clear who is a parasite and who is a mutualist. Cheating is common. It is more common than we think in nature. And that depends on cost and benefits. If a hummingbird sees that it's easier to go through a hole than to get into the mouth of the flower, it's going to do that. It's an osprey, doesn't find any ticks, but it finds a wound, it's going to go for the wound. And current research tell us this. The opposite is more probable, that mutualists came from parasites. I found something in my research. I did research on nectarivore birds in the Andes, and I wanted to build the ecological interactions, the network, ecological network between plants and birds that drink nectar. Of course, birds that drink nectar are hummingbirds, no? But there are some other group of birds that are not very well known, that are the flower piercers. Why they have this name? Because they have a specific adaptation. They have a hook in the bill that is designed to grab the flower, the corolla, and poke a hole. So in this popular book, that is a textbook for ecology, the course of ecology, it says that flower piercers are thus parasitic on plants. Well, I made this network because I observed which bird visit what plant. Those are the main plants that are being visited. And this is the main guy who visits almost all the plants. The copper metal tail is an endemic. But something quite interesting. This guy is very little and has very small beak. it will be impossible for this bird to visit a flower like the Passiflora, who is very large. How is it possible that this guy can visit these plants? It's thanks to these other guys, the flower piercers. They make a hole, and then this bird uses this hole so it can access to most of the flowers. They help to shape the whole ecosystem. By the way, we can make parasites to work with us. That is part of the dominion of creation. People have been using leeches all the time. Penicillium, it has been used for penicillin. And rabies virus now is being harnessed to study the connections on the brain of the mouse. Why did God create parasites then? This is something that I show to my students when I talk about ecology. This is from the book of Judges. So, what does this book of Judges have to do with parasites? Nothing. But here you found out this. Why did God didn't throw up the Canaanites from the land? Because I will use them to test you. I will allow those to remain. And that is the function of parasites in our body. Then this is my conclusions. There is no proof that all parasites were mutualistic. Parasites don't just harm. They maintain ecosystems. They test the human body and the human spirit by humbling us and making us more dependent on God. We can harness parasites. They can work for us. And we can still understand the goodness of God in creation with parasites inside. And any questions? Okay. We're happy to answer.
Join me in thanking Dr. Bellow. And we have 3 or 4 minutes for questions. So I'll let you just entertain those questions rather than me.
You know, I suppose you could test the hypothesis by looking at molecular phylogenies and in particular finding the basal parts, the descendants of the basal parts, and seeing whether or not the shifts from parasitism to mutualism occur back and forth, which one is more likely to occur?
Well, that is exactly what the sources said. No? Even one that was very old from 1982, and this is that is closer, they have used some of that. No? They have used some phylogeny, and they have said usually more. Some of them that are we know as mutualists, they could be have been parasites.
How did they base their conclusion that basically the parasites became mutualists more probably? How do you determine that?
One could be by this phylogeny, no? Being what could trying to compare these organisms that have been that we know that now are parasites, and checking the history, the molecular history on the genes, but also it is not really clear, because as I did show, some of the even most dear examples of mutualists, they could be parasites. That really depends not just in the in what we think it is. It is on the opportunity, in cost and benefit. Having this analysis, sometimes these guys that could be parasites could be mutualistic or mutualistic.
That was another question. On that first slide, you had a quote from the that place in Kentucky.
Creation Museum, yeah.
And it had as before Adam. Is that supposed to be part of the Bible?
That's how they interpret that. And that's how. And that's how.
A real quick look at my. Cell phone suggests I can't find it in this translation. It seems like the whole thing is built on an improper premise if it's supposed to have been biblical.
Yes. Well, something that we know is that God created everything good. But that is now an inference that is not just typical of the creation music. It has been also how I was taught
in my evangelical church, and I think how people are still being taught today. But then exploring a bit more, that is not strictly what I think the Bible says.
All right, I see we're all we have. Is it a brief question? I'm hearing challenge, so is that a yes or a no?
I don't know how long the answer will take.
Well, we're into our transition period, so I need to excuse people, but you can raise the question if you like.
Okay, so just briefly, I just want to know, you mentioned a lot about how there are certain parasites that are meant for good. Before the fall, are there any parasites that were meant for harm, and if so, how do you reconcile that?
I can't. That's a theological question. I am a biologist, not really.
Can I take that one?
Yeah.
So, the earth has Satan prowling around trying to tempt people. Why is that any worse than a parasite or bacteria?
Well, I meant before the fall.
But he was prowling around before the fall. So, what's the problem? Like, and I'm not trying to be insulting, I'm just, like, most people have never thought about this. Like, there was conflict baked into the equation from the very beginning.
So do you think the earth was not perfect before the fall?
Correct. The scripture never suggests that the earth was perfect.
Yeah,
that's a Western Sunday school book construction that is not in scripture at all.
We've made good in our own.
Yeah. We think that the perfect means that there was no death. No? Bible doesn't do that.
No.
No. We are extrapolating the spiritual death to animal death, death of everything. So this is something that if we are going to follow up with science, it doesn't happen.
Very good, thank you.
Several minutes now before transition.